Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are for comics that came out in July 2009. We're talking about the top comics as sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. And as always, we'll start with the breakdown of the top 300 sales by percentages by publisher. And as is really no surprise, Marvel once again came out on top. This time they only had 98 items on the list, four of which were reorder. In months past, they've had well over 100 items, and they only accounted for 45.8% of the units sold for the total of the top 300 and 48.35% of the total dollars sold by the units for the top 300 comics. So, strong lead, but not the overwhelming lead that they've had in some months past. DC came in a decent second place with 89 items on the list for reorder, and they only had 36.92% of the total units for the top 300 and 34.61% of the total dollars for the top 300. Now that means that the Marvel and DC percentage of sales by units for the top 300 was 82.72%, and that's really kind of, I don't say a really low number, but, you know, lower than average. In a lot of cases, it's more the 85, 86, or whatever percent. And they accounted for, you know, roughly the same amount by dollars as well, with 82.96%. So the majority of the comics in the top 300 are getting sold by Marvel and DC, but, I mean, this is standard practice. So nothing horribly surprising there. Coming in behind that, in the 1 to 4% range, we've got IDW, Dark Horse, Image, Dynamite, and Boom. You know, all of which are doing okay, but, you know, even combined, they're only making up about 13.68% of the total units sold. You know, which leaves just a tiny, tiny fraction for everybody else. Of 3.6% of the total units sold for the top 300. For, you know, Archie, Devil's Due, Cartoon, Udon, Antarctic, Red 5, you know, everyone else.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, it's a combination, though, of units sold, which, I mean, obviously you have tons and tons of units from Marvel and DC, but then you look at the number of items that are coming out from these other ones, too, and, you know, cartoon books. I mean, they put out one book. You know, so it's,
well,
like,
they put out one book that made the top 300.
Right.
Because in some of these cases, I mean, they're putting out more than that. Not cartoon books specifically, of course. But, you know, when Marvel and DC are each coming out with, you know, 90 or 100 items, you know, by nature,
I think probably more applicable is like Avatar, for instance. I know Avatar shipped more than four books during the month, but only four hit the top 300.
Yeah.
At least I'm pretty sure that Avatar put out more than four books in a month. Well, although I don't know if they're combining all those variant covers into single.
Usually they will if they have the same cover price. One of the things I'm going to do if I ever have the time to rewrite my number crunching system is to compare against the shipping list for the month of how many items actually were offered and shipped by each publisher. You know, in other words, not limit those numbers to just the top 300, but be able to compare it to what made the top 300. Because I think that'd be interesting information of, you know, Archie's here listed with two items, yet they usually come out with about a dozen comics a month. So a lot of those fell below the top 300 within the direct market as served by Diamond. But, you know, the numbers are what they are. So, all in all, I don't think anything too earth-shattering on the breakdown of the top 300. The total units was 6.9 million units, which is a fairly healthy amount. You know, we've been seeing a lot of kind of up and down this year, with some months being, you know, really good compared to the prior month or the next month, and, you know, vice versa. A lot of peaks and valleys.
Well, a little bit of a bounce back with the events this month, just because, you know, we went 1 month there that didn't have anything break 100,000, and then, you know, just, you know, one or two items over. We got six items over 100,000 here, and that Captain America Reborn, that's, you know, 193,000. That's a lot.
I think we're going to see that one plummet big time with the second issue.
I'm very surprised, though, that there are that many ordered of that book compared to Blackest Night. And, well, I shouldn't be that surprised, I guess, given that, you know, Marvel in general just pulls more numbers than DC does. But still, 193,000, that's a pretty solid showing for a book.
Oh, you know? Totally, totally.
More than Batman and Robin did, and that was a big book. And, you know, Blackest Night, Blackest Night did credibly. It was right in the same ballpark that the first issue of Batman and Robin was at. So, you know, I think I'll be curious on how Blackest Night holds its numbers compared to some other series.
I think Blackest Night,
a lot of people are getting in that event mode, you know.
I think Blackest Night's going to hold the numbers reasonably well. I mean, you look at, again, Captain America Reborn, you've got the 193,000. The question is, will that retain or not? Blackest Night came in with 176,975 estimated units, which is only about 1,000 or two below where the first issue of Batman and Robin number one did last month. But then you look at rank number three here, where we've got the second issue of Batman and Robin at 117,899 estimated units. That's a drop of over a third. And I think a lot of what happened with that is people wanted to check out the first issue, see if it was any good, both because it was a new Batman title, it was a new Batman, hell, it was a new Robin. Pretty sure it had alternate covers, but hell, everything in the top 10 this month had, you know, multiple covers. So I think with Captain America Reborn, we're going to see people who are curious about, you know, Cap coming back, maybe impressed with the story, maybe disappointed with the story. But again, the orders are done before people have read the stuff, so I'm expecting that to drop. Blackest Night, because it's had such a strong build-up across the DC Universe, I think we will see a drop on the second issue, but it's not going to plummet. And I think it's overall going to retain sales pretty well. And you look at the Blackest Night Tales of the Core issues, because we got all three of those at ranks 12, 16, and 17. First issue did 83,405. Second issue did 77,221 units, which is down 7.41%. And the third issue did 75,081 estimated units, which is down only another 2.77% from the second issue. And those are clustered really fairly tight, with only about a little over a 10% drop between the first and third issues, all of which are over 75,000 for a secondary series for Blackest Night. That's
and
really strong.
Something to point out to people who are not longtime listeners of the Mayo Report segment is this is a great example. You know, the Blackest Night, you know, you had issues 1, 2, and 3 all came out in the same month. The drop-off between issue 1, issue 2, and issue 3, I just am unwilling to believe that that is got anything to do with the readers and the sell-through. It has everything to do with how retailers order number ones versus number twos versus number threes.
Well,
I think they automatically drop the number of issues that they order because they can't have had any judgment. You know,
I agree and I disagree with you on that, because obviously these orders were placed all within the same month because they were ordered at the same time. Retailers are making these decisions. They are not basing it based on readers coming back after the first issue saying, I love it, I hate it, whatever. Okay? With the cycle time of when these came out week after week after week, there wasn't that kind of, you know, feedback time, even with the final order cutoff. Because the final order cutoff for the third issue happened before the first came out, I believe. But I do think this is a reflection of the retailer's feelings of how excited the readership is and how interested the readership is in Blackest Night. So I think if this had been a standard first, second, and third issue drop, it's usually about a 21% drop to the second issue and about another 10 or 11% for the third issue. And here we are between the second and third issue drops being around that 11% mark. So this did better than kind of your standard knee-jerk, you know, retailer order mentality in aggregate.
No, I agree with you there. Yeah. But, I mean, there's still the only thing I'm trying to say is that the drop here between issue 1, 2, and 3 is 100% an artifact of retailer ordering, not on reader reaction or actual sales.
Agreed. But, I mean, the whole system is based that way because of how right. they've got to pre-order in advance. And it really comes down to how tuned in are retailers on both what's coming out in the books and how readers are feeling about it. And, you know, with this series in particular, there were a couple of things that I think we both felt were a little surprising about some of the contents, both in good ways and bad ways. You know, the director's cut of Blackest Night Zero in the third issue, you know, versus a new story.
Right.
And, you know, whenever I talk about retailers doing this, that, or the other, I'm talking about retailers in aggregate, not your retailer at your store or the one down the street or the one across the country, whatever. There are some retailers out there that are exceptionally smart, tuned in, and just brilliant. There are others that I'm amazed they can keep a store open. But if you go with the wisdom of crowds concept, the intelligence we're gathering here is essentially a confidence vote or by the retailers in aggregate, or a prediction of what all of them think, and not any individual one, but how they think these titles are going to do. So when we see major reorder activity on some books, such as Captain America 600 down at rank 181 with over 10,000 units of reorder activity, that means that the retailers, at least some of them, but overall didn't gauge the interest in the book appropriately necessarily, and they ordered more. Now, the unfortunate part of the system is, since it's a non-returnable market, if these retailers over-ordered on Blackest Night, Tales of the Core, they're stuck with them. You know, and that's where it really comes down to how much information do they have about these upcoming books, how well can they gauge how their customers can sell their books. Because what we're looking at is an aggregate of how sales are across the country, and if you were to chart the sales for any store or any, you know, subset of the readership, you would have a completely different ordering of stuff, you know, in terms of what titles come on top, what come on bottom, you know. And that's just, you know, nature of the beast in terms of, are you dealing with a random subset or even a geographically constrained subset of readers, or just how things are doing overall. So, but based on how strong Blackest Night Tales of the Core did, I think we're going to see DC do reasonably well over the next couple of months. And while we may not see sales, you know, doubling or whatever with some of these crossovers and stuff, we might. It's really, you know, a little too soon to tell. Now, flip side of that coin for DC is you look at rank 36. We got the first issue of Wednesday Comics. It did 47,945 estimated units. Not a horrible start, but not something that's, oh wow, it just took off. And they had to order the entire series before seeing any of it. With the one-page installments, with the double flip-out, you know, fold-out kind of tabloid, oversized tabloid or whatever size to it, this was a major unknown. And you can see where we had an 11% drop on the second issue, taking it down to 42,351 units. Another 7.86% drop on the third issue, taking it down to 39,021 units. And another 7.44% drop on the fourth issue, taking that down to 36,116. And while that's a lower than average drop for the second issue, you know, between the third and the fourth, I mean, we're quickly losing quite a bit of ground on this. And it'll be interesting to see if we get reorder activity on this and to what extent, and kind of how the sales chart looks for Wednesday's comics, you know, about 4 months from now, when not only is the series over and we've got all the sales, but another month or two after that, to see if we get any late, you know, reorder activity on that. At this point, I suspect when we get the numbers for the final batch, they will have had time through the final order cutoff system to adjust those, and we probably won't see major reorder activity on, you know, issues 9, 10, and 11, and 12.
So as long as I'm down looking in this general area, I notice the Ultimatum Spider-Man Requiem down here at 41,344. And that's not much of a drop over the first issue is 44,970. What was Ultimate Spider-Man selling?
That is a good question. Let me go back a few months in the spreadsheets because it's the easiest way to go find it. That was one that at one point was just doing gangbusters, but, you know, over time, over 100 issues, you're going to lose some sales.
Which is why they rebooted it with a new number one, which I am sure will be burning up the charts. You know, a lot of people were buying it.
What was the final
round
issue? Was the final issue 130?
133, I believe.
133, all right. Let me pull up that spreadsheet then. I found the one that had 132, but let's go for the one that's got it all. And where is the, there it is. Okay, the final issue, 133, was 57,341 units. Prior to that, it had been doing closer to the 50,000 mark, as far back as, say, 128, which did a little over 52,000 units. So it was hovering in between the 50,000-55,000 mark. It had a high point around 123, where it did a little over 57,000. And, you know, again, going back in time, it appears to climb, which means since we're looking at it in reverse chronological order, it had slid. Let's actually start from the beginning. Better way to do this. First issue did 54,407 units. It stayed around the 50 or so thousand units through the first few issues. By issue 4, it had actually climbed to above 59,000 units. With 6, it went to 65,000, then 76,000 with the 7th issue. It then jumped to 84,000 by issue 8. It was around that level up through, we'll say, issue 20, at which point it starts to crack the 90,000 mark. By issue 25, it cracks the 100,000 mark for a couple issues. Then with 28, drops back down below 100,000 with the 98,000 for a bit. Hovers in there through issue 32. And then it was consistently breaking 100,000 from issues 33 through 46. Still doing, you know, above 90,000 or whatever. Occasionally breaking the 100,000 up through issue 69. It then does in the 80 to 90,000 range through 78. From there, it goes to the 70 to 80,000 range up until 103, with obviously 100 being an exception to that, with 119 plus thousand. 104, which was the end of the run of Bendis and Bagley, did 108,000 plus, and then it was the, again, 70 to 74,000 for about up through issue 112. Then it starts dropping below 70,000, getting as low as, again, 55 or so with issue 122, and then finally getting down below, you know, 50,000 with 130 and 131. Mm. So, I mean, this was, for a while, a consistently top seller. You know, very strong sales. But, you know, we'll see how the reboot goes. I suspect it'll do well initially, but but it's hard to duplicate that kind of success. And even early on, it wasn't that kind of success. It took a while for it to build some momentum and get some steam behind it.
Well, that's very interesting.
All right, Justice League Cry for Justice number 1 came in at rank 21 with 68,267 units. That's another one that I kind of suspect we'll see a bit of a drop-off, just again, natural attrition and whatnot. Daredevil.
Good-sized drop on Detective Comics after that, the first Batwoman issue.
Yeah, a little bit above average with a 23.11% drop, taking it down to 61,160 units. That's one that I'm thinking we're going to see some reorder activity on, because I think it may be a little bit of a sleeper hit.
Yeah.
It certainly, I think, got the chops for it, you know. We'll just see if people pick up on it and, you know, flock to it or not. Deadpool Merc with a Mouth. I mean, do we really need another Deadpool series? This one came in the first issue with 55,638 units, which is a little bit below where Deadpool number 12 is, a few units above, with 58,764 units. These are not sales that make me think, ooh, let's franchise this out into a couple of titles.
On the other hand, Deadpool Merc with the Mouth is a $3.99 book, and Deadpool is a $2.99 book, so even though they sold fewer, they made more money.
True, true. But, you know, I'd be taking stuff higher at the list and franchising that out. But, I mean, they've already done that.
Well, yeah, but higher up the list is X-Men and Wolverine books and, you know, Avengers, but it's like we already have those things franchised out.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, Hulk, look at Hulk. I mean, you got Hulk, you got Incredible Hulk, you got Scar. You know, it's got a little empire going there.
Yeah, well, and look at the sales on those. We've got Son of Hulk with 29,174 units. We've got, where do we got the other ones in this area? Are they in this area? You could argue if Incredible Hercules is part of that ilk or not. Since it inherited the numbering, we'll say it is. It's right below in rank 70 with 29,167 estimated units. And did we get an issue of Hulk? Yeah, Incredible Hulk 600, which, you know, gee, big surprise, big jump there. It did 92,275 units, and of course, since they flipped the numbering and name on that, I don't have the history in this, so let me go back to last month's spreadsheet, and let's see, Scar Son of Hulk was doing 35,906 units last month, and why am I not seeing Hulk at all last month? When did it come out? Is it, I tell you, the shipping on these titles is erratic enough that that causes problems. Let's go back one more month. And Hulk 12 did 73,103 units. So, I mean, that one's dropped quite a bit since it started. It started at 139,827 units, showed a pretty steady decline for two issues, then did a little bit of a bounce with issues 4 and 5, jumped up a bit with 6, and then started dropping back down with a little bit of a rebound on issue 11. So, I mean, that one's at least high enough I can kind of see, you know, franchising it out. But I think what they're finding is too many titles, it just, you know, dilutes the waters.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we have that looks interesting? Another pretty big drop on Batman Streets of Gotham with a 23.29% drop for the second issue, taking it down to 44,207 units from the 57,627 units the first issue had. A noticeable gain of 42.86% on Titans 15, taking it up from 32,308 estimated units to 46,115 units. And let's look at the solicitation. This is the Blackest Night prelude with Tempest returning. So, again, we're seeing a pretty noticeable jump up with the Blackest Night crossover. Only a 42% gain. I say only because if you look back at Civil War and how that pumped up some titles, in some cases that doubled and tripled sales. So we're not seeing that yet on Blackest Night, but as that kicks into high gear, who knows, maybe we will. But in any respect, holding sales steady or even jumping up by 42%, nothing to be displeased with.
No, definitely not. And, you know, it's to some extent, it's like, you know, when you were reading off those Ultimate Spider-Man numbers before, and that was a very atypical pattern that they had going there, where they were actually growing, you know, as they went along. That you don't see that frequently, which is why most series don't last, you know, on an ongoing basis for very long. And, you know, I think ultimately you see what happened to Ultimate Spider-Man. It stopped growing. It started contracting again. And it contracted to the point where they said, you know what, we're gonna can this, put a new number on it, and for some mystical reason, the fans will buy the thing like drunken sailors, or as if we would have done the exact same issue as number 134, they wouldn't have. You know?
Yeah, there's a certain, you know, irony to that. If we look at another title that's had kind of a similar, you know, upswing in sales, and one of the few that I could think of that would have this, and that's Walking Dead. We haven't talked about this for a little bit. First issue of that back in October 2003 did 7,266 units. Next issue dropped down to a little above 6,000 units. Third issue took it just below 7,000 with its first climb, and then it started to climb fairly steady. It broke to 9,800 units with the sixth issue. By seven, it was doing over 12,000, over 13,000 with issue eight, over 14,000 with issue 12, over 15,000 with issue 14. Saw a bit of a bump with number 19, where it jumped from doing 15,539 on issue 18 to 17,223 on 19. But then slid a bit with the next issue to just below 17,000, 16,918. From there, it stayed above 17,000, jumping above 18,000 with issue 23, 25. Issue 25 brought it above 19,000, slid below 19,000 with issue 27, but with issue 28, it got above 20,000, got above 21,000 with issue 31, above 22,000 with issue 38. It jumped a little above 23,000 with issue 42, but only for that issue. It took until issue 49 for it to break above that again. With issue 50, it hit 27,683, which I think is an all-time high for that book. And then it's been in the 23,000 to 24,000 units pretty much ever since. And, you know, it's gain a little ground, lose a little ground kind of a thing. It's more or less kind of leveled off, with the last three issues being all between 23,901, or actually issue 61 was 23,901 units estimated. Issue 62 was an estimated 23,900 units, and issue 63 an estimated 23,983 units. So really, less than a 100-unit difference for the last three issues. That's fairly stable sales, which is good, but it's not growing the way it had been. You know, that kind of growth is unusual and hard to maintain. And this is one of the books that really, you know, we're looking at just the sales here of the monthly comics through Diamond. Once you factor in the trades, the hardcovers, the uber hardcovers, the, you know, however else he's managed to repackage it, I mean, he's doing some pretty good business.
Yeah, Keith said, I was at the panel he did in San Diego. Yes. He was even surprised and made the remark that, you know, it's like every time he repackages the book in a different format, people just buy it. It's like, okay, you know, I make an omnibus. It's like, well, they have the thing. They buy it again, you know. It's just, it's weird. It's a good book, but I mean, he's sold probably some of those issues, you know, 10 different times in different formats.
Well, and by having it go on as long as it has with, you know, 63 issues so far, he's got a fairly deep library, again, of the trades, the hardcovers, the omnibus. I mean, he's got the backlist to support him, and that's great. You know, there are not that many titles that have an issue number that high or higher.
Right.
Matter of fact, I mean, it's, you know, just a few dozen. And you start getting into the Thors, the Batmans, the Supermans, the X-Men, the Fantastic Four. I mean, the Evergreens, essentially. All right, what else do we got that looked interesting? 30% drop between issues 0 and 1 of Project Superpowers Chapter 2. But the previous price was $1. So, you know, when it went from $1 to $2.99, yeah, I think a couple of people pulled back on that. And I think that is, you know, pretty much completely understandable. We've seen that sort of a thing where the promotionally priced initial issue, in this case 0, other times number 1, does, you know, surprisingly well unit-wise, but really once you factor in the dollars, it's like, okay, you know, retailers were risking about the same amount, or, you know, factored that in on their decision on how far to pull back.
Well, I think another thing that people take in, I've heard a number of people remark this, you know, both on forums and in comic shops, you know, and conventions and stuff, is that they'll say, well, you know, I'll try out that issue, and if I like it, then I'll buy the trade when they put it out, you know.
Yeah.
So they buy the cheap promotionally priced thing, and that lets them decide whether, oh yeah, that's good, I like that, but I'll buy it in the trade.
That makes sense. All right, now this one I just find funny. We've had some talk a while back about Brave and the Bold and how is that writing style they started with really, you know, clicking with the modern audience or not. Issue 25, and of course they've changed the writing style substantially over time from what it started with Mark Waid and George Perez. Issue 25 did 21,218 units. If we go back to when that title started, it was at 98,242 units, so it's dropped, you know, substantially. It's dropped so far that it fell below Marvel Divas number 1 with 21,600 units. And which issue of this was Brave and the Bold? Who was in this? This was the Blue Beetle meets Hardware. Yeah. Debating which one I thought was the better comic.
I thought that was an okay. I read the Blue Beetle meets Hardware one. I thought it was okay.
I thought it was okay, but I didn't think it was anything special.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an okay comic. I can't argue that it's not in the right place on the list, you know.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we got down here that looks interesting? Where do we got some big movers and shakers? Irredeemable saw a 6%+ gain between issues 3 and 4. It gained 780 units, bringing it up to 13,613. I think this is a really good series. I also think anyone who is reading it should check out The Mighty. And let's see, where is that on this list?
I will say I finally acquiesced and bought The Mighty number 1, because you'd been bugging me about it forever, and I thought it was a really, really good series. I liked it a lot, and I will be, I'm not necessarily going to be adding it to my straight pull list, because I do have a feeling that this is a doomed series, but I'll be picking the issues up as I find. I actually ordered 2 and 3 out of a dollar thing. So,
well, best of luck finding them in the dollar bins, because issue 6 of the Mighty is ranked down at 250, having sold 6,655 estimated units.
I'll find them.
Eventually, yes, I'm sure you will. But it's not something that's going to be, you know, just sitting around in every store.
No, I am buying these things on the internet, so.
Yeah, I know.
The virtual store.
Well, and that's where things like this are going to, you know, congregate.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting here because we're seeing above this a few ranks. At rank 246, we've got issue 854 of Detective Comics, the first Batwoman one, with 6,760 reorder units. So I see that as a good sign. Let's go ahead and jump to the bottom of the list. This month it bottoms out with Warriors Jailbreak by Dable Brothers, obviously at rank 300 because it's the top 300 list. Wow. First issue of that did 4,059 units. So, you know, anything below 4,059 didn't make the list this month. Scooby-Doo made it at rank 297 with 4,107 units. And Scooby-Doo, you know, reasonably, you know, consistent seller. It varies a bit, but it's not one that, you know, plummets and skyrockets. Down here at this end, we've got third issue of Atomic Robo, Shadow from Beyond Time. We've got Unknown from Boom, number 3, with 4,256 units. What else do we got down here that looks interesting? Reorder activity for Deadpool Suicide Kings, number 1. It's like, do we really need more Deadpool?
Somebody does. Jason Wood needs more Deadpool. He loves them.
Hopefully he's buying enough to support these things.
I suspect he's buying one.
Yeah. Trying to see if there's anything that's got just a huge move in either direction. Rift War dropped 42% from the first to second issues. Actually, one thing I wanted to mention is at rank 195, we've got Tyrese Gibson's Mayhem number 1. This is not the actual issue that hit stores. This is the alternate cover version that was for Meltdown. And just through Meltdown, it sold an estimated 9,728 units. We'll see how the rest of it, how it sold at the rest of the stores and stuff next month, because it was an August release, not a July release. But I thought that was a good testament to how, you know, an actual, you know, solid marketing campaign that reaches outside of comics, how that can do. You know, whether they're able to maintain that success on future issues, I don't know, because their promotion seems to have been very heavy on just the first issue.
It was Simon Dark canceled there out at, like, around issue 18 or so?
Yes. And you ask because?
I was just thinking, you know, it's like various books that I stopped getting. They're like, are they still around? You know, I'm like trying to think of, you know, we're down here at the bottom of the list, and I remember it was one that was always hovering around near the bottom. I don't see it on here.
No, it ended a while back. And it, like the Mighty, is one that was poorly positioned. You know, it's listed in the DC Universe books. That one theoretically was set there. I mean, they called the city Gotham, but there was really no evidence that it was. You know, you look at that, you look at the Mighty, you look at Family Dynamic, and these are all books that where they were placed in previews was in an area where the people in that section of previews, you know, with Simon Dark, with Fallen Angel, with the Mighty, you've got people looking for mainstream DC Universe books. Those weren't really mainstream DC Universe books to a large extent, either, you know, explicitly or, you know, de facto. Again, Simon Dark set in Gotham, but it could have been any city, so not really set in the DC Universe. People who would have been interested in that stuff was scared off because it's in the DC Universe section. They probably figured it was part of the DC Universe. So, I mean, they mismarketed it in all of those cases, and I think that's a shame. I think DC needs to establish a part of their preview section that's under the DC banner, in other words, not part of Wildstorm or some of these other imprints, but also clearly not part of the DC universe for these kind of tangential things.
No, I agree, and it's like, well, but, you know, is that's kind of a two-edged sword, right? Because we've seen a number of books that are placed over in the Wildstorm imprint, and then they just, nobody buys them over there.
Well, and that's why I'm saying don't do them in the Wildstorm imprint, because that one's gotten a reputation of not selling well. That brand is tainted. You know, the fact that they're still coming out with Authority, Stormwatch, Wildcats, and Gen 13, one of which I'm not sure is still coming out, you know, is surprising, because the sales on those, not that great. Matter of fact, let's pull those up real quick. Let me filter this down to just DC, make it a little easier to find those. And Authority, number 12, sold 8,911 units. And Wildcats, number 13, 7,603 units. Stormwatch PhD, 5,086 units. And if Gen 13 made the list, or was still being published by this point or whatever, it would have fallen below the list, maybe. Or maybe it's higher and I'm just not seeing it. But it's not going to be that high. So, I mean, these books, and that's the core Wildstorm stuff. You know, the other titles you have from Wildstorm are doing, in some cases, a little bit better, with Ex Machina doing... That one's got enough of an erratic schedule, it may not have come out this month. Let me check last month real quick. I mean, the sales on Wildstorm books are such that nobody's thinking, wow, it's going to sell great because it's a Wildstorm book. Or let me rephrase that. Nobody outside of Wildstorm is thinking that. And not saying anyone inside is, I'm just saying that they may be a little too close to it to be kind of objective. And the last issue I see of Gen 13, number 30, sold 6,877 units. So, I mean, you can't put something over there and think that the brand is of Wildstorm is going to help the sales. It just...
Right. You know. I agree with you on that. I think Wildstorm should pretty much stick to being the Wildstorm books. You know, it should, you know, the Gen 13 and Stormwatch and Authority and things like that, and they should take these other books like Ex Machina, and when that the Storming Paradise was out, and what was that other book that we liked with the two spies, ran only six issues?
Highwaymen.
You know, books like that, you know, and same thing, you could take The Mighty, and, you know, just have some different imprint for those that, you know, says, look, this is a story. It's not the mainstream DC universe. It's separate. You know, and as a matter of fact, I would have liked them to just to slap those Red Circle books in there, you know, into that imprint and not try to tie them into the DC universe.
Well, they seem to be trying to tie everything into the DC universe these days. The Milestone characters, the Red Circle characters, there are one or two other groups they're trying to pull in. And it's like, I personally think that's a huge mistake because of the implicit message it's sending that the problem DC's having with sales in terms of competing with Marvel is their characters. And when you've got Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, and a host of really cool characters, if you've got to be bringing in the Milestone characters, the Red Circle characters, and I'm forgetting what the Thunder Agents, I guess. You know, those are fine characters. I got nothing against them, but they're not the A-list characters that, you know, is the core of the DC universe. Mm-hmm. And again, it sends the message that, well, maybe the problem is the characters we're trying to use, which I think is just completely wrong. All right, what else do we got that looks interesting? Do a quick filter on the percentages and hit the ones at the two ends of the spectrum.
I am interested that, and I don't know how typical this is. I just am noticing it this month, but they drop below 10,000 in sales before they get to number 200.
Oh yeah, that's very common. That's,
yeah,
the median is usually around 13,000-14,000, and that's, you know, the 150 mark, and we're usually below 20,000 before you've hit, you know, rank 100. So the average comic is really only selling a few tens of thousands of units, if that.
I think it's, you know, some of these books down here, like Sword, selling 8,159. That's criminal. That's one of the best books out there. I mean, and it's like I look at the bottom of the list, and there are so many books that I think are just so well written and I enjoy so much, and they're just not even seen by the majority of the comic buying public.
True, but I can't fault the retailers for that. There's, you know, too many things competing for their dollars and their shelf space, and if they don't think they can sell it, they shouldn't bring it into their store. Yeah. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If they don't bring it in their store, there's no way they can sell it.
That's true.
So, I mean, it's a tough thing to be a retailer in terms of, you know, I have a hard time sometimes just deciding for myself when I'm pre-ordering through DCBS, do I want to get a particular thing or not? And sometimes I'll get it and think it's horrible. Sometimes I won't get it and find out it's great and I should have gotten it. And that's just for my own personal tastes. If I had to then guess what a couple hundred, you know, customers were thinking, I'm not going to say I could do any great job ordering right for my store. And that's why I think any store that doesn't have a pull service and try to solicit pre-order information from their customers, I think that's just foolish. You should have one of those. You should use one of those. You know, not be blinded to it and follow it, you know, religiously or whatever, but use that as a guideline. And hell, I'd track when people are adding and dropping things from that and see if there are any trends that come out. So I think there's a lot that could be done with data mining on a good point-of-sales system, you know, particularly if you've got a large enough base of customers to you know, be gathering data on. We had 55 issues on the list that sold more than the previous issue. We had 173 that sold less. And let's see, 64 that my system could not find a previous issue for. And 8 were reorders this month. At least identified as reorders. Sometimes it gets one or two of those wrong. And let's see, we had 129 items at $299. We had 120 items at $399. So a little over 43% of the list was the $299 price. A little over 40% was the $399 price. So we haven't quite hit that tipping point yet where the $399s are winning out, but you know, we know that's just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. What else?
Well, and you know, the $399 thing, I think the real telling part of that is going to be, I can see them going to $399, but the differentiator is going to be the $399 books that give you additional content versus the $399 books that are strictly just the same 22-page package that they're just charging you $399 for.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, value for the money, but, you know, there are a lot of $399 books near the top of the list.
Oh, yeah.
There's at least, fortunately, quite a few $299 ones, too. But, you know, without information at the point of sales level, it's hard to know how many people are having to drop other books so they can justify, you know, or be able to afford, I should say, some of these $399 books.
It does not appear to be preventing anybody from buying a book.
Well,
you know, the top books.
It doesn't prevent them from buying a $399 book, but that doesn't say it's preventing them from buying some other book.
Some other book. I agree with that, but I'm just saying it's the books that they are raising in price don't appear to be taking substantive hits in their numbers.
Yeah, well, the last time I looked at, was there any correlation between going from $299 to $399 and a major drop in sales? I found no such relationship whatsoever. You know, in some cases, it would flip to $399 and go up in sales. You know, now, granted, in a couple of cases, they're doing what they did with Captain America, where you know, it goes from actually it went from $2.99 to $3.99 to $4.99 back to $3.99 over the course of a couple issues, and that's with issues 50 and 600 back to back as kind of event issues. So that makes it a little hard to tell. But even with Captain America 601 at the $3.99 price point, it did 87,780 estimated units, whereas 49, which had a $2.99 cover price, only did 63,865 units. So clearly, the increase in price isn't scaring people off that title. If anything, it's jumped up quite a bit. So again, there's not that correlation of people dropping a book because it goes to $3.99. Again, whether people are having to drop some other book they're not as interested in because some other stuff's going to $3.99, we just don't have the granular data to determine that. Gut feeling, from what I've heard from some retailers, price increase really isn't affecting buying habits at all. You know, I do think there's a contingent that has a fixed income that they're, or a fixed budget, I should say, that they're going to allot to comics. Those people may be getting hit, but the typical comic buyer, anecdotally, it seems this isn't phasing their buying habits at all. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for me, unless you got something else to go with.
Nope, that's pretty much it. Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.